Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, you know how we're always being told to drink more water? How much water do we really need? One of the country's top experts on water's effect on the body joins us, and you might be surprised by his recommendations.
But first, we know that early cancer detection saves lives, and this is especially true for colorectal cancer. A relatively simple screening procedure enables gastroenterologists to look inside the colon for growths that can grow into cancerous cells. So, why do so many of us put off getting our first screening colonoscopy?
Here to explain what's involved in a colonoscopy and why it's such a powerful diagnostic tool is Dr. Rajiv Jain. Dr. Jain is a partner at Texas Digestive Disease Consultants, chief of gastroenterology at Texas Health Dallas, and clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School. Welcome to Take Care. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm pleased to be here with you.
We're going to talk about colonoscopy today. What I'd like you to start with is just tell us about the screening colonoscopy. Describe it for us. Who should have one?
Well, to begin with, a screening colonoscopy is indicated for people that are 50 years or older as a routine screening procedure to detect polyps, which, if left alone, could transform into cancer. And that way we can prevent cancer by removing them, or to detect early cancers and then cure them before they've had a chance to get out of control and spread to other parts of the body. So that's the reason it's such a powerful tool in preventing colon cancer. And in fact, we've seen a 30% reduction in cancer death from colon cancer, which many attribute to these kind of screening procedures. The colonoscopy really is, as you mentioned, is not that bad of a procedure. I think the majority of patients that undergo this procedure have no difficulty or minor inconvenience at most. It's just that the maybe 1 out of 10 that had difficulty with the bowel preparation, the cleansing that needs to be done prior to the procedure, is what leads to folks becoming scared of the procedure.
And we're going to talk about that prep in a few minutes, but why don't you tell us about the procedure itself? What takes place and what are you looking for?
So the procedure starts off by the patient presenting typically to an endoscopy lab. It could be in a hospital setting as an outpatient or an ambulatory surgical center. And typically what happens is the patient has an IV, and through this intravenous anesthesia is administered. And that way the patient is comfortable and does not have just pain. At that point, once the patient is comfortable, we insert a lighted tube about the size of the average person's finger, and insert that into the colon or the large intestine, which is about 3 feet long. And we then advance that scope all the way to the beginning of the colon, taking a very good look on the way in and out. And if we see anything, we can remove it right then and there. And that's the true power of the procedure.
So when you describe a polyp, what exactly is a polyp?
That's a great question. A polyp is what I like to tell my patients is a little bump in the lining of the colon. It can be like a wart on your skin, and it can be flat, and those are sometimes the more difficult ones to find, or they can be what we call pedunculated on a stalk. And those are the things that we carefully look for and try to catch so that we can prevent cancer.
So if you find a polyp, now you're inserting this tube, but you're looking at a screen, like a TV screen, right? That's what allows you to see what you're doing. Do you clip the polyp right there? Is it biopsied? And does the tube with the light on it have the ability to have little snippers on it, or do you have to go back in? What's involved in removing a polyp?
Again, that's the beauty of the colonoscopy, is that it's one-stop shopping, if you will. The colonoscope has additional channels within it. So I can advance a biopsy forceps for small polyps and literally take a bite out of the lining of the colon and remove the polyp completely. For polyps that are larger, we can advance a little catheter through the colonoscope that opens up like a lasso, and we sort of can guillotine off the polyp or use cautery, that is electricity with thermal therapy, and burn the edges and cut the polyp out. And then through an additional channel in the scope, we can collect those specimens And then we give that to the pathologist to look under the microscope to give us a more definitive idea of what kind of polyp that is. The reason that's important is that there's two broad categories of polyps. One is called benign or hyperplastic. These polyps are felt not to increase your risk of developing colon cancer. The other category is called precancerous polyps or adenomatous polyps. And those subtype of polyps, if left alone, are the ones that can potentially transform into colon cancer.
Can you tell that at the time you're taking it out, or is that after it's been to the pathologist's office?
When we see polyps, we're pretty good at making an educated guess, but that's not good enough. So we take all the polyps out and submit them to the pathologist so that we have a definitive answer.
How long is the actual procedure involving the scope?
The total time for a colonoscopy from insertion to withdrawal of the scope is about 30 minutes in the average patient.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about colonoscopy with Dr. Rajiv Jain. He's chief of gastroenterology at Texas Health Dallas. We're talking about the procedure and what takes place. Now, you mentioned earlier about the prep for the colonoscopy, and I think most people that have had it, the screening procedure, will agree that that's really, if anything is unpleasant, that is the unpleasant thing, because once you're under that mild sedation, you don't feel pain, you don't feel anything, and the next thing you know, you're done. But we do have to talk about the prep because that it plays a large role. And why don't you talk about the prep and the point of why you need such a thorough cleansing of the colon to get a good look?
Those are great questions. The bowel preparation is probably the most important part of the procedure that the patient has control over. And we have numerous studies in the medical literature which show a direct correlation with how clean the colon is and the ability of the gastroenterologist to find more polyps. So the cleaner the patient is, the more polyps we can remove. And the idea would be that the lower the risk of developing colon cancer then. So for us to see that lining, the patient has to be cleaned out, or for short, you hear us call it a bowel prep or just the prep. And typically, a bowel preparation involves that the day before the procedure, the patient goes on a clear liquid diet. So that would be broths, jellos, things like that that don't have solid or fibrous material in it. And then the ideal way now, based on our studies and national guidelines, is the patient should undergo what we call split dose prepping, meaning they drink one round of the solution the evening prior to the procedure. And then early the morning of the procedure, they drink a second round of the preparation. And then again, they don't eat or drink anything for a few hours so that their stomach is empty when we sedate them. We don't want them to aspirate any fluid from the stomach. So this two rounds of bowel preparation leads to a very clean colon. The good news for all of our patients out there is that these newer split-dose preparations are lower volumes and are better tolerated.
Doctor, this is Lorraine speaking. I don't want anyone to think this is Linda, but I will be perfectly honest with you. I find the whole prep so unpleasant. And the thing I don't understand is I talk to different friends that have had it, and each one of us has had a different approach. We were, given a prescription. Some people had pills. Some people had a larger amount. Some people were told to put their drink in the refrigerator. I don't understand why there isn't just one universal prep. And at one point, I was told I could take pills, and I thought, well, that solves the whole problem. But of course, that really didn't, because there were an enormous number of pills you had to take every 15 minutes, and it was just as unpleasant. I'm here to say just my own personal experience. Why are there different preps, and why don't doctors come to a consensus about this?
Part of that problem is the inherent autonomy that all physicians like to have and feel that they have. I think in terms of the numerous options, it goes back to the 1980s when the first what we call pegylated solutions came out, and that's the go lightly or new lightly type of bowel preparations that were several gallons. And that actually was really transformative in that prior to that, there were all these laxatives and purgatives that patients had to take that was much worse than what we're doing now. They have, over the years, refined the bowel preps so that the volumes have become smaller and the side effects have become less. And I think as we get more data, you should see gastroenterologists starting to do more and more of the same, and that is doing lower volume split dose prepping. You mentioned the pills. There were pills and another subtype of a preparation called sodium phosphate-based preparation, and those were very small volumes. Some of them, as you mentioned, the pills required you to drink almost as many glasses of water as you would have with the big 4-liter jug. The problem with these phosphate-based preps were that some patients developed kidney damage, and the damage was bad enough to lead to dialysis. So for that reason, those preparations have been removed from the market or been highly restricted.
Dr. Jan, I don't know if you would be interested in this. I don't even know if gastroenterologists are aware, but this has obviously, grabbed the public consciousness to a level at which people have put YouTube videos on of their prep process. They show how much they have to drink. They talk about drinking it, and they talk about the whole process. So I think the problem is, I had mentioned to Lorraine, my husband for three years, avoided having a colonoscopy. And when he actually had the procedure, he thought it was a piece of cake. But people paint the prep so evilly that I think that there's a whole lot of anxiety surrounding it. As a gastroenterologist, as a person who knows the efficacy of this procedure, what would you say to somebody who's on the fence?
Well, I say to them, kind of like the experience you did, I first tell patients, nobody likes to talk about their bowel function. That's just not good table conversation. So it's common at a dinner party for somebody to tell you that they had this kind of plastic surgery. But nobody walks in there and says, I had the best darn colonoscopy ever. And most of those patients do have easy colonoscopies. It's the squeaky wheel that kind of tells the bad experience they had, which is not the norm. It's the exception. So I will one-on-one reassure the patient that the vast majority of patients have no problems or minor inconveniences at most with doing the bowel preparation. And that the most important thing is, everything we do is a risk and reward. And if we want to decrease our chance of getting colon cancer, which is the second or third leading cause of cancer-related death in America, this is a small inconvenience to pay to prevent that kind of outcome of cancer. And when I give them that discussion and I go over more detail about the bowel preparation and how to do it, it's easy to see that the benefits of getting a colonoscopy and doing the bowel preparation is absolutely worth it.
So let's just go over this again. At what age are they recommending you have your first one? And then how often? And if you would address those people that have no family history and then the general population, what are the guidelines now?
The guidelines say that for that average risk patient, as you mentioned, no symptoms and no family history and no other conditions such as ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease that may increase the risk of colon cancer, then that average patient is advised to undergo colon cancer screening beginning at the age of 50. There are several options: testing the stool for blood, doing a short scope called a sigmoidoscopy. But if any of those things are positive, the patient gets a colonoscopy. So in about the early 2000s, screening colonoscopy became the dominant strategy in the United States. So you should get one at the age of 50, a colonoscopy. If it's normal or if the polyps that are removed are benign, then that patient is still considered average risk and would come back in 10 years for a repeat screening colonoscopy. Now, of course, if someone develops symptoms in between, we don't wait 10 years. We would take a look sooner.
What about those people with a family history?
Those patients that have a family history of colon cancer, and when we think of family history, we talk about first-degree relatives. That would be parents, siblings, and children. If those relatives have had a colon cancer, particularly under the age of 60, that patient is considered at higher risk. So an example would be if someone's mother had colon cancer at age 52, we would recommend that they get their first colonoscopy not at age 50, but 10 years younger or 40, whichever comes sooner. So that patient would come at age 40. Whereas if a patient's father had colon cancer, let's say 46 years of age, we would have that first-degree relative come back at age 36, 10 years younger, to get their first colonoscopy. And if they had normal colonoscopies, we would have them return not in 10 years, but 5 years. So it's a shorter interval.
Dr. Rajiv Jain is a partner at Texas Digestive Disease Consultants, chief of gastroenterology at Texas Health Dallas, and clinical assistant professor of medicine at University of Texas Southwestern Medical School. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure to be with you all, and I hope your radio listenership will get their screening colonoscopy.
For more information on colonoscopy and Dr. Jain, visit the Take Care webpage at WRVO.org. If you've missed a past interview or you'd like to hear one again, podcasts of our show are also available at our website and on iTunes.
Coming up, how much water do we really need to drink each day? A nephrologist from the University of Pennsylvania has the answer, and it might surprise you. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.